growing up is realizing that Squidward was the most relatable character on SpongeBob. And I'm like, is realizing that Visser 3 was the most relatable character in Animorphs. In 1996, Scholastic began publishing Animorphs. Over the next 6 years, Catherine Applegate and her husband, Michael Grant, under the pseudonym K.A. Applegate, produced 54 main series books, several spin-offs, and inspired a TV series, graphic novels, and a cult following. We can't tell you where we live. We can't even tell you our last names. But we can tell you our thoughts and feelings on this series, book by book. I'm Miranda.
I'm Eddie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are... The Anadorks!
These may be kids' books, but we discuss dark themes and mature content. There may also be some explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Okay, should we jump into finally discussing?
We did it. We did a whole second season, and it turned out long.
It took a year, basically.
It took a while. Well, yeah. You know, everything, I don't know what to say about it. I don't have any jokes yet.
It's very hard to contain season two of Anadorks because we've spent so much of it on Andalite Chronicles that it feels like we've actually done two seasons.
Yeah, it feels like we did season two and then we did Andalite Chronicles.
Yeah. Right. Well, our seasons are made up just like winter isn't real anymore.
We took a break.
That's very true.
Yeah. We took a break between season one and season two. We are not planning to take a break between season two and season three. So
no, because we recorded so much content that I was literally able to be out sick for a month and a half. Yeah. And we didn't stop releasing episodes.
It's crazy how much we still have possibly two more episodes in the, like, I have to edit it this weekend, but we still have two more. As of this recording, we have two more episodes coming out on Andalite Chronicles.
Yeah.
So, like, what we're recording now won't even be heard by our adoring public for 3 weeks.
Yeah. What we have left after turning our podcast into an Andalite Chronicles podcast.
Yeah. We should have what I'm learning is we should have just done the Andalite Chronicles.
Yes.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, like, are we going to go back in? Like, at the end of this podcast, should we just start the whole thing over with book one, or should we just right now start Andalite Chronicles
Chronicles again.
Please,
like,
no.
what's the Ouroboros here? Like, where is our journey?
I would read part two and part three again eventually. I think I'd skip part one at this point.
Yeah, we kind of struggled with part one.
Part two at the Mustang.
Part two at the Mustang.
Yeah, but it had the tax on hunger.
Yeah.
But part one also had all the stupid stuff about, like, Andalite politics that was none of the stuff about Andalite politics that I wanted. You know what I mean?
It was like, I wanted a fucking parliament scene.
Right.
That's like prequel trilogy.
There's fan kind of content.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Where is
Senator Amidala?
If there's like fan fiction for parliaments of the Council of 13 or whatever,
oh, that's
where
the
they don't
council,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but where they don't know who the ruler is.
It's like a big game of coup.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. You can't all be the Duke. Come on.
I think that's I'm stupid. Now reading Animorphs purely with the hope that I will see a scene of that. Like, I want, we don't get, we get Visser, I guess, but there's no Yurk Chronicles or anything like that. But I just want to know about
tiny
it.
Chairs.
Yes, they are.
Or are they in the? Okay,
or they
have to
we,
be. They
I
have
thought we said goblets. So are goblets. The goblets on chairs?
If for some reason the flashback I'm having is to a scene in Pan's Labyrinth where she thinks she makes it to where she wants to go in the movie, and it's so alien and foreign to her, like, I feel like if I ever see any true Yurk lore, I'm not even going to be able to trust it.
Are
I'm
going
to be like,
about,
did I die?
Yeah, are you talking about the scene at the very end where, spoiler alert, she is dead, and it's like this regal fairy court that has no resemblance to anything she's seen the rest of the... Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is sort of like, her picture of, like, heaven, and she thinks her real mom and dad are there, and, like, it's...
all you need. Yeah, I mean, and dead is dead, as dead you'll know from Lost.
I think it would be the chairs from Pan's Labyrinth. I can see that now, but I had kind of imagined them like the Jedi throne room. This pillowed, round chairs, you know, that Mace Windu sits now, on.
When they did the Jedi throne room, how many, like, because they should have done chase lounges. Mm. They should have done, and, like, leaning back like this, like, come on in, Anakin.
Yeah. You know, you're right that, like, I feel like a lot of sculptures and paintings of, like, important people of the time portray them that way, and yet we never portray them that way in important moments. And I think that that is something we're lacking. I think every single parlor, like, when I do a production of Julius Caesar and they're on the Senate floor, everybody is going to be reclining regally with like a tiger.
Or replace all statues in the world with the same people but on a toilet. Or like, you know, if they're bad statues, get rid of them.
The
I'm just saying,
it's a toilet is definitely that one's
the only one that is a toilet.
That one, he's just hiding that hemorrhoids. Wasn't a toilet.
Okay, you can't think too long.
Especially given that it's the gates of hell. Like for me personally, living my life on
the gates of hell.
No. The thinker is from the gates of hell.
Oh, you're right. Right. Sorry.
This is a Rodin thing, right?
It's a Rodin thing. But I'm saying, like, my personal hell would be if I had to sit on the toilet forever. Like,
it's true.
Your butt gets tired. Yeah.
You're a bitch. Yeah.
It's, we need a squatty potty. Like, the thinker should be on a squatty potty at least.
That's true. The human condition is humiliation. So, like, for some of us, it's a fear. For some of us, it's a kink. But, like, let's get it done.
Yes. Yes. And the one thing humans can be said to create other than a big old mess is poop.
Yeah. Which is a big old mess.
Yeah.
To some.
I think we've said this on. I think we've said this.
So what are we talking about? Okay. What's our podcast about right now?
I think we've said this on the record before, but I kind of want to jump in to how there was a moment where our season 2 ended with book 12, the reaction. Mm.
There was an alternate timeline.
Yes. There was a moment where it could have been that, or it could have been what we created. And
yes.
We decided to do Andalite Chronicles.
Yes. I pushed for doing Andalite Chronicles. I thought we'd get it done. We were deciding this in early August. I thought we'd get it done by the end of September, early October. And I believed that. And this was a lesson for all of us, but it was a lesson for me, especially. So,
if you ever want to like intimately become aware of some of your favorite people's habits with time management and scoping out processes, start a podcast with them because
it's true.
We've all made some wacky guesses, and we all have to live with that because we're still here.
I drew up a calendar. I was like, no, look, guys, look, we'll get through part one in 2 weeks. We'll get through part two in this much time, and I was confident. I really thought. And then we thought we would take the fall off.
December.
The fall became December, and then December became January, and now here we are. And then January, holy shit, so many curveballs. So many curveballs.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought?
We basically, I would say, right around late September, maybe all of September, October, we burned out, I think, is what we can say happened now in retrospect. And
I'm still proud of what we did.
Yes.
I think the Andalite episodes, despite being a meandering mess, they are
part
some
one,
of my
I think.
Jokes.
Part one. I think we couldn't get into part one too, which was part of the problem. And like after I think the succession, as we're gonna talk about, the relevance of some of the things in the books had taken a bit of a turn, you know, like the books, things that happened in books 10, 11, and 12 didn't all feel, and 9, majorly 9, actually, didn't all feel that important.
Yeah.
And so when we got into Andalite Chronicles, I think we were all really excited to get into something that felt important. And then book 1 of Andalite Chronicles didn't feel as important as I wanted it to. And I was just like, oh my God, it's going to be more of this nonsense, blah, blah, blah. Andalites running around a ship, captain this and this or that. And like, yeah. But yeah. Then it did take off. It did take off. I really loved Andalite Chronicles.
Yeah.
I think like the only thing that like stresses me out about it is like, it was, even though books that meant nothing in particular, like, you know, I know Rachel's book is controversial with Jonathan Taylor Thomas, but right. I still liked that it was building a shared lore between yes. the kids, like, yeah. and that it was something that, like, there were going to be callbacks to, and, yeah.
Well, I mean, so, which, that's what I think, Miranda, I think what you say is definitely true. It's not what, I think part of this is maybe a problem of Andalite Chronicles, even though we don't expose ourselves to that much of the fandom, like, we do try, I think, to, we want to go in and experience these books ourselves. Andalite Chronicles is... It's hard not to hype it up, even just the fact that it's a Chronicles book. It's longer.
Right.
But mm-hmm. also the fandom mm-hmm. does hype up Andalite Chronicles. And so I think they didn't know exactly. I think we thought we were going to get some essential text. And I'm sure it actually will feel like that and is. But it did feel... the first part of that felt... I don't want to say pulpier, but like it just felt... the important stuff didn't come until later in that book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also think it didn't feel important, like you said, at first, or not important in the way that we thought it would. And also, everything felt important because we were learning an entirely new cast of characters.
Yes.
Very true.
And
yeah,
a new yeah. world. So it felt really dense in that way.
Yeah. Like, our mechanism for paying attention to things and doing, like, analysis and also just keeping track of everything. Like, we were like, everything is signal. Nothing is noise. But yeah. then... It ended up...
We had to talk about everything in part one. Even if we didn't care, it was technically relevant.
Yes, so like, it felt that way. It felt that way because I am a person who struggles with accurately assessing the urgency of information put in front of me. And so it's just like...
Would you say that's why we go through these books with a fine-tooth comb? Like,
fine-tooth comb, yes.
And we're like...
Well, I mean...
Has Alfie seen Rhodes before? Like, that's where we're
at. Yeah.
Rhodes, that was a big thing. The cloth for me was a big sticking point. And yeah. I know I really harped on that.
Pobbies. Tobin's like the other funny thing is going back is like I thought I just listened to so the episode we're about to release we talk about which is we're calling it Rimming the Pocket Verse just so you know yes. which episode we're talking about
so if we get forcibly removed for explicit content from Apple Podcasts you'll hear it here, I guess.
Yeah, like, we'll rename the episode and I don't know what it'll be called then.
We don't know why they would flag it because we're just talking about traversing the outer
rim of something. Right. Yeah.
When one goes to the rim of a volcano and circumnavigates it,
yeah,
is
you're not going to say circumnavigating.
No, you're going to say
I rimmed it. Yeah.
I rimmed it. Yeah. Right.
We were rimming the volcano.
we have to keep word counts down, my guys. Like, come on. Like,
and when they're taking your margarita glass and they're putting the salt on the rim and you realize they're about to stop.
They're rimming it with salt.
And if they're about to stop and you want a little more salt, you say, keep rimming it. Keep rimming it.
And then you go, I wanted this rimmed with sugar. And you're like, well, give me. Bring me one rimmed with sugar and I'll drink both, you know?
Right, yeah. and really, exactly.
So we don't know why they would take down the episode.
I have one more example, but I don't know if it's, it might be too illustrative, but it's like, if you've ever done analingus and you're using your tongue to please someone via analingus, look it up. But you would,
which has nothing to do with the term we're talking about. No,
nothing to do with it at all. But you would go around the rim, and that would be an appropriate time
just to
maybe use this new word,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. The max and the min.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yes. Why were we talking about that? So my point was that in this episode we talk about Andalite Tobin's. And as I was listening to the episode back, I was like, you know, I think we talked about it before. We did. We named an episode of Andalite Chronicles, Andalite Toe Beans, and I had completely forgotten. So
yes, that's how long it is.
Yeah, if you guys feel like you got lost in Andalite Chronicles, we also got lost in Andalite Chronicles, just like book 11.
That had one of my favorite, when we did that episode, you and I had the funniest roleplay text message thread. Do you remember this? Where I was like Master Toe Beans or something like that, or like King, like Queen Toe Beans.
No.
Do you remember this? I'll send you pictures of it. I really hope I still have it. I know I sent it to Miranda, but it is very, very funny. Lord Toe Beans. I was, Lord Toe Beans. That's who
I was. The great thing about not remembering jokes like this is that you get to laugh at them like it's the first time. So speaking of book 11, I kind of feel like in retrospect.
I thought you were going to say speaking of Toe Beans.
I think that was my favorite book from this run. At least it's the one that I think. Maybe the episodes were my favorite. Maybe talking about it was my favorite. But I think I just had so much fun recording book 11 and then also listening back to it. Those books feel so far away for me now that like I don't know if that's an accurate assessment to how it felt to read it. But
I was gonna say, like, if I was gonna pick a favorite book, I'd pick book 8. Although it feels a little bit like cheating.
Mm. Why does it feel?
Because I feel like book 8 sort of belongs more with the first set of books than it does with 9 through 12.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm kind of torn, and I feel like you guys are going to hate me for this. But I'm right now, no joke, I'm somewhat split between 9 and 12.
12 I'm not surprised by, but 9 is a bit of a shock.
9... I really liked, there were some accidental things that happened in 9 that I actually think back on very fondly, such as Cassie helping the skunks on the side of the road with her dad, not to mention the creation of the lore of the Dapson Lumber Company.
Dapson Lumber Company,
for some fucking reason, the fact that they put in this detail that there was a shell company that they were using as a front for Yurk activities.
And that also was like a Yurk swear word or something. Yeah.
Book 10 was also incredible. I think book 10 would be up there for me.
Book 10 is, look, they're all up there. Book 10 is like, I don't know why, but I could feel that it was never going to be important again. It felt like the Chi were going to be, you know how everybody talks about in Lord of the Rings, why didn't they just take the eagles? Like, why didn't they just fly on the eagles? It's like, I feel like the rest of the series is going to be, why didn't we just get the Chi to help us? Like, why
do you think they don't come back again?
I feel like we might, like, I feel like we're going to get a phone call. I feel like he's going to be like, we've sensed a disturbance in the Force, but we will not get involved or something.
I really was hoping that Eric King would show up every 6 books or so.
That'd be nice.
I'd like to have, I feel like we have to start having characters like that. Like, the Elemist is going to be like that, I think.
Elemist is definitely going to come back.
I mean,
back.
The Elemist has been around
but like,
a lot lately.
The Chi, like, showed up and then immediately nerfed themselves. Like, they were nerfed, they unnerfed themselves, and then they re-nerfed themselves.
Yeah.
It's true. It's the northern exposure thing where the plot has to reset every episode or every 3 episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you're going this long as a series, not that much cannot change in any one given episode.
It's true, especially if you have other people working on the books and you don't know what they're going to write. Like, you can't just paint them into, Rachel has robot arms. No, she kept her original arms, but she also has robot arms now. They just don't mention it in books 25 through 40.
book 11 is what I'm looking forward to getting more, though, because I kind of think it's so fun. If you know you're going to have the rubber band effect where everything has to go back to the way it was, I can't wait for them to do more extreme things like
Book 11. Yeah, then it's fun when it really spirals out of control, for sure. Like, that they got to be like, everything went crazy and they all got eaten by a monster, but Jake managed to send himself back in time, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, that's book 12.
That's 11.
Oh, no, I'm mixed up. Damn it. Oh, we should start calling them by their names to clear up the confusion.
Right, I'm sorry, book 11, The Forgotten. That might be why so hard for you to remember.
Is that actually the title?
Yes.
So
that's unfucking real. The one title that actually helps.
Well, I'm going to run through the list quick. So, because we haven't talked about Megamorphs at all, but Megamorphs with the Valeek. So we started, it is really a weird shape to this, like, season that we made.
Well, you picked a weird font.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about the books themselves.
Yeah. Megamorphs 1, which had the Valeek. Book 8, The Alien, which I remember that as being the book where Axe goes to a movie theater, and it's also where Axe phones home. And that one bookends really nicely with Andalite Chronicles for how we set this up.
It very much does.
Book 9, The Secret, which was Cassie's book. That's where Visser 3 slaps someone. The Termite Queen happens there.
Yeah. And we all play Skunk Mother.
Yes, but they don't breastfeed. That's like also something that comes up. Just to be clear, none of us thought that, but we're making that clear to the audience.
Thanks, Ed.
But yeah, of course. Book 10, The Android, which was a Chi. Marco goes to that concert. That we read that.
Yes.
We read that in June, I think. It's insane.
They get slippery at the lake. There's jet skis. It's very fun.
Yeah.
My God, we read that in June. We're like older now. Yeah. Like this whole process has aged us.
Yeah. We have like that.
It also turned my gallbladder into calcium, apparently.
Well, that might have been book 11, but.
That could have been book 11.
Book 11, The Forgotten, which was the Amazon. Our Animorphs went to the Amazon. No, they didn't. Only Jake did.
Well, they all did, but only Jake remembers that timeline.
Yeah, and they all died.
Which they give a pretty flimsy excuse for why Jake gets to remember that timeline. Because Jake also dies in that timeline. He just, like...
woke up 10 minutes later when he would have been like, making the decision.
I don't remember how they worked it out, actually. Shit, I should check.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they say like it's like a conversation with Axe where Axe is like, oh yeah, and then he talks about that girl that distracted him in class.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think even when we reached the end and we were making sense of it, and I think when we got an email from CJ, I think we were still like, oh, it doesn't actually, we kept theorizing how it all held together, but I think our theories kept falling.
Yeah,
apart.
The flashes weren't in the right order and stuff.
They did. They shuffled the order of the flashes, which, like, again, could have just been an editing thing. Like, we were trying real hard to line it up, and maybe just, like, some quick change had to happen.
And maybe they were like, oh, we could have the flashes make sense, or we could have the most interesting one first or something.
Oh, I remember what I theorized. It was like Jake actually died, but the rest of them were being digested. And because Jake...
That was what I thought, too.
Jake died before they went into the... what was it? Like a ShopRite or something? Uh-huh. Before they like did their heist mission and got in the time machine? It was just a ship. It wasn't a time machine. But it's like...
Not yet.
He like... falls through the window and realizes that his like timelines have just reconverged in this moment and is able to stop them from happening because he came back sooner because the others were like just being slowly digested or something.
Right. Yeah.
And so they didn't keep their memories.
His consciousness was free at the same time as he was like beginning the loop.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the loose idea is that because he committed to death, don't do it. But just like, it is really dark. It's like, because he was the one who actually
That book was extremely dark. Do you remember how Rachel got torn apart by ants?
Oh, no.
And Jake was just taking bits of her fur and flesh to lead another ant colony to her to kill the ants that were eating her?
So that an ant war would happen on top of her.
Yeah.
Stuff in that book was so unpleasant that I think that that's part of why it couldn't possibly... Like, at the end of book 9... we got a grape juice covered Visser.
That's true.
Like that's fucking good television right there.
Yeah, it's just some intense whiplash to this run of books. Book 12. So that was book 11, The Forgotten. Then we had book 12, The Reaction.
Brip croc,
which I
didn't realize it was going to be an allergic reaction, but that's like what it was.
Yeah, I remember that book. I think we had so much fun talking about that book that I remember it more fondly than I do reading it.
Yeah, you didn't love that book. I liked that book a lot. It was very silly. It was very silly, but
I think I do appreciate it more in retrospect too, because it it was so silly. And Andalite Chronicles was silly in part two, like when they're driving the Mustang and everything. But I miss the silliness of the main series books right now. Mm-hmm.
Same. Yeah, same.
I miss our kids. Our kids. I said it again.
Our kids. Yeah. Our children. They'd be about your age now.
So I was thinking about this, right? And I was thinking about how to put it. And I'm like, so in season one, in our first seven books, and then really kind of in book eight with Axe, but Axe has to do both in one here. So like Axe is a little bit in the first group, a little bit in the second group. Major arc one, if you'll call it that, like up to we meet the Elemist, I would call like, you know, we talked about the fine, you know, reason to fight moment. Mm-hmm. What did we call it?
Why I fight,
that's it. We talked about the why I fight moment. I would call that like Spider-Man 1. Mm-hmm. And I would definitely call these books like the Spider-Man 2 of the books where it's like we're realizing the negatives that come along with what happens, you know, even to a certain point, you know, even an amazing Spider-Man 2, like a death of Gwen Stacy kind of moment in some of these, like we're really dealing with the consequences of the powers that we have, and not just the powers that we have, but how we've chosen to use them. And what it means for the people around us, especially in like Cassie's book. I think as much as the death of the forest is like the death of Gwen Stacy to her, her big moment, I think, was realizing that that skunk got shot because of her. Like, because if you remember, the skunk they found had been hit by a Draken beam that was only fired because they had attempted to infiltrate the compound.
Right. Right.
So, like, and in The Alien, Axe has a whole death of innocence about his whole culture. You know what I mean? Like, he realizes a lot of the propaganda, and he realizes his role in having furthered it in the past. And this is why his is sort of more still like in the beginning, but he does have that death of innocence that I feel like is present in all these books, because I feel like Rachel has a death of innocence in like the crush she had on Jeremy Jason McCall was, I mean, it's sort of the most innocent kind of crush you can have as like a young teen, where it's like on a totally unattainable person and it's like not real and it's totally imaginary. And then she not only like actually meets this guy, but he's not just yerked. He like agreed to be yerked. He's a control, like a voluntary controller. And so that was like a death in her eyes of like a part of herself, I feel like.
Jake kind of has this nightmare scenario of leadership. Like realizing like the impossibility of being a leader, and also like the impossible situation is the position he's been put in as a leader, and also that like everyone does actually. But book 11 was kind of like everyone still kept looking to him and blaming him for things, even as he was being put into that position by them.
Right.
You know?
And then in The Android, I really think as much as Marco is like Marco has two modes, right? He has, I don't want anything to do with this, and he has gung-ho, let's kick some butt. But I think at his heart, he is sort of a pacifistic person who doesn't want this, especially like with the introduction of his mom being Visser 2. Like, he really doesn't want...
Visser 1.
Sorry, you're right, Visser 1. I don't know why I said Visser 2. We have no idea who Visser 2 is.
We have no idea about Visser 2. Frankly, it could be me.
You're right. But, like, I really feel like, and maybe it was for the audience, too, that, like, I saw someone mention in a thread recently, I don't remember if it was on Reddit or Facebook, but, like, someone was talking about how the books seem to glorify pacifism, but ultimately say that it doesn't work. And I feel like that's what we get in book 10, right? We get these pacifists who won't do anything, but then they do agree to do something, and they seem to be a weapon that could end everything, and they choose to remove themselves from the board.
I do agree with that assessment. It's like, we are putting these kids in situations where they're having to like decide against like minor and major atrocities on the reg, and like it's pretty like... To say that the books are pushing for pacifism, it's like an anti-war book would make pacifism look good. This book is like on its journey to making pacifism look good, maybe, but like
maybe.
And I think it's a little bit
like, yeah.
I don't think they fully figured out their feelings and thoughts on, like, some of that felt a little half-baked with the Chi, because The thing I remember we really got stuck on was that the book seemed to have, say, it would have been noble, and if we, like, that it was noble that the Chi were pacifistic even as enslaved people building the pyramids. And we were like, oh, right. Actually, like,
yeah,
like that, that's because it's that a weird territory work. Because it's,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's actually noble to overthrow people who are forcing,
right, right. And especially, right, being androids who were programmed to be pacifists, yeah. And as much as we hear them say that, well, the Pimalites were completely pacifists and that's why they didn't even know how to fight back when the Howlers came, the Pimalites made the Chi, they coded the Chi,
yeah, yeah.
We're getting a totally one-sided story on whatever, yeah, happened in that world. But, like, literally the journey they're on is to find something powerful enough to override their pacifistic programming.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
so that they can, yeah, like, break the laws of robotics.
Yeah.
Which, like, even that thought goes beyond what they conceptually had outlined with the idea that they were programmed to be pacifistic. Like, it just doesn't... It's, like, such a weird metaphysical,
yeah,
circular logic.
Yeah,
that,
but the important part of the Chi, I think, or at least an important part of the Chi in terms of Marco's development, and also just the development, that one kind of feels like it applies to all of the Animorphs, is that Marco witnesses, what was his name, Eric?
Eric King.
Eric.
Yeah, Eric with a K.
If he commits violence, doesn't he remember every moment at every
time? He remembers everything, and it really harms him.
And so they realize that, oh, we actually, if the things that we're now doing as Animorphs, if we actually remembered the full weight of what we were doing at any given moment, we would be driven mad by it. Like, it makes...
That's true.
It's like the effects of the violence that they're already participating in because they, yeah, are defending their planet. They're fighting the Urks. So, mm-hmm, and so it's definitely, there's a lot of, like, I think that goes back to this cost. There's a lot of, what is the cost of... how our lives have changed. Like, what is the cost of being an Animorph that we're,
yeah,
seeing?
Totally. And, yeah,
the Spider-Man 2 effect.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. 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 So now we have to, in the next series, of course we could look forward to Spider-Man 3.
Spider-Man 3,
season,
which, yeah, I think we're going to get into some, are we going to start getting into some Ghostwriters? Because that feels like some
Not
Spider-Man
yet.
3
I think
shit.
That's in the
20s. Not yet? All right. That'll be some Spider-Man 3 shit for sure.
yes, yeah. Do we want to? I have the list here of what we're going to read, like our narrators.
I think yes.
I think
we should
more to
go
talk
through
about though. With
and I would like, oh, yeah, to. Yeah. I would like to. Yeah, we have more to talk about, but I would like to play a game here. If y'all will humor me, I would like. So the titles so far, like, you know, the Forgotten. Like, come on, like,
that's
the reaction. It's an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
But I think we're cottoning on to, like, what. How these titles kind of work. And so, like, I would like to take a guess at what the plot is.
Of the next six books that,
yeah,
we're talking
so
about.
So, like,
reading.
Here, I'll kick us off. I'll kick us off for the first one. So we have a list here. The first one we would be reading would be book 13, The Change, Tobias. The book, in this book, Tobias collects enough pennies off the ground to start a high-yield savings account and is able to buy some piece of equipment that the Animorphs need,
yes,
to fell the Yurks or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, like, see, that's what I'm saying. Like, when I hear The Change, nothing is safe anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it could be that literal. They could be pulling a fast one.
Okay, what about
Very
this?
True.
What if The Change is that... Tobias grows up and he moves out of Jake's drawer.
Whoa, and goes to Berg College.
Goes to Berg,
yeah,
College.
Oh, that's so cute. Him in the little dormitories.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do start season 3 with Tobias narrating, which we haven't
Very
had.
Very excited.
We've seen him narrate in Megamorphs, which also we should talk a little bit about Megamorphs because I feel like we've totally... No?
No, we can talk about Megamorphs.
They dropped the whale.
They did drop the whale.
They dropped the fucking whale, yeah, dude. That's like it's more than jumping the shark. It got good then.
Yeah. I do think of that as like our... as our page turner, like our blockbuster. And I think we talked about it that way at the time, but it was just so,
oh, it was
exciting.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a very exciting read.
The thing that we have to, like, it is, it, the book's called The Change. It's very hard not to hope that maybe Tobias starts morphing again. Like, I feel like that would be
a nice thing to hope for.
It would solve the problem of Tobias's plot stagnancy too, I feel like.
Yeah, he'd be able to do other things.
Yeah.
Knowing what we know about Tobias and like about everything, we don't know. We know that the Andalites didn't have a way to bring Nothlitz back. Is it going to be some sort of tapping into the deep part Andalite that is his Elfangor lineage?
Or is it just the Elemist? I feel like.
Right. Is the Elemist just going to come back into play?
So next we have Book 14, The Unknown, which is Cassie narrated. And with this one, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that the whole book starts off with her in a classroom and Miss Paloma asks a question for a pop quiz.
All right.
And she just doesn't know what the answer is, but then somebody else gets it. And she realizes that that person must be a Yerk because they know the answer to this question.
Oh, it's like and that episode of Doctor Who where he's like a teacher at that school where they're using alien technology to like do something to the kids' brains. And he's like, how long is the Great Wall of China? He like asks increasingly ridiculous questions. Yes, and he's like, how long is the Great Wall of China? And the kid's like, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, in cubits. And he just spits out the answer.
Right.
And it's like,
right, exactly.
Something is wrong.
But the reason why it's called The Unknown is because Cassie goes home and is like, I didn't know the answers to any of those questions.
Oh my God. That would be a low-stakes book. That would be a change pace.
Well, what do you think it's about?
I have no idea. I think The Unknown is a terrible title.
That one's a real mystery for me. They're just going somewhere new. They're doing something they don't know.
There's a short story called The Unnameable where, like, three people are sitting in a graveyard describing some horrible thing they've seen, but they get to the end of it, they're like, I don't know what that was. It's like, what should we call it? I guess we'll call it The Unnameable. And I could see that being the end of The Unknown as well.
The Escape, I want to take a stab at. I think it's going to be about, I don't know if they'll be successful, I think it's going to be about trying to get Marco's mom back.
Ooh.
Oh. I thought it would be about them having to go on Penn and Teller's Fool Us as Magicians. And that being...
It'd be an escape trick of some sort.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's just what popped in my head.
I think you're pitching books that will get in the 20s and 30s, Chris. I think you're getting a lot. They've still got some sense of the universe they're working with right now.
Oh, come now. I think Penn and Teller were big in the 80s and in the 90s as well.
Okay, so book 16, we've got The Warning, Jake. Mm. Now, here's what I think. For this, I think this book is, I know you've already got a better idea, Chris.
No.
You just can't wait to say
I'm so excited to hear yours. I am. It's getting ramped up. You're taking a long time to say it, and I'm getting more and more
Chris
excited.
Has the biggest smile on their face, and it's very unsettling. What was I even going to say? Oh, I think we get another Chi-like scenario where they get a warning. Some other group, some other Animorphs from a different race or different people who are like the Animorphs and something that happened in their fight against the Yerks.
So like some sort of rebellion.
Yeah,
you don't necessarily mean a group of Morphers, but like a group that's fighting the Yerks.
Maybe from
so
Mountain
cool.
Taxons
like,
or Port Bajir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, or just even another gang of humans who figured it out. I mean, there's conspiracy theorists everywhere.
Point.
And we had in book three, that guy running through the woods that Tobias helped.
Yeah.
Like maybe that guy starts to put it together. And the woman in the woods in Megamorphs who knew about the Yerks.
Yeah.
Maybe
she's coming back.
Humans are starting to pick up on it. Yeah, she better. She fucking better.
I hope
I wanted her to be
Bajir,
someone's
though,
mom at one point.
Because I love getting to learn more about the taxons, but I really want to know more about the Hork.
Now, what Bajir. I was thinking for this book was that they have to... So
you were thinking
Rachel's
of something,
on,
Chris? You had an idea?
Yeah. No, I had this thought going into this meeting, but I was laughing in my anticipation. So my thought is Jake gets put on student council and has to plan the next prom. It goes really horribly, and Jake at some point slightly abuses his power, and Chapman has to give him a warning.
Okay. Yeah, that's
Chapman's
that
like,
sounds fun.
I would suspend you, but you're a good kid. your brother Tom is a high-ranking Yerk. I'm just going to give you a warning.
Can I tell you, for some reason, this is making me think, I remember the... I feel like this reveals something like basic about who I am as a person as a kid. I remember thinking, oh, wouldn't it be cool if you had Animorphs powers if you had your friend turn into a really cool pet and then you brought them in for show and tell and it was like actually your friend.
That's so cute.
Or you turned into a cool pet and then they brought it.
Everybody loves me. Just love me.
Yeah, is that what that reveals?
I think it does. I think it's I want everyone to pay.
Yeah. So maybe that's The Underground.
Yeah, book 17, The Underground, narrated by Rachel. This is obviously the one in which she dies, and they bury her 6 feet underground.
You don't think it's when we meet the dwarven race equivalent of this?
Ooh, the lizard people who live under the crust.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
They need lizard people, actually. I mean, it's Hork-Bajir, but...
Yeah.
I mean, how else would you run a globalist Illuminati conspiracy?
Yeah.
Or do you think that this is a riff off of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater Underground, and this is actually
we're gonna
do like a world tour on her skateboard. Yes.
And Bam Margera
will be there. Wow,
can't wait for book 17.
Rachel could skate.
No, Cassie's the skater. They're rivals.
Was it Eric Sparrow or something was the name of your friend in that game who was horrible and like ripped you off multiple times or something?
Also,
at the end of the game, like basically stole your footage and you're still friends with him for some reason.
Yeah, I forgot about him. Yeah. Underground, I feel like maybe they go back to, maybe they finally destroy
the
that
Yerk pool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that would be boring. That would be so
great. I think
great.
The world tour is a much better idea.
Well, maybe they go on tour after they destroy the Yerk, like a book tour.
Maybe they destroy it by grinding around the rim, by rimming the Yerk pool.
By rimming
the Yerk pool! Oh my God! Yeah. I can't wait to have an episode titled Rimming the Yerk pool! maybe we try and go for a streak and see how many titles we can get with rimming in it in
Book 18, The Decision, Axe.
Mm-hmm. Axe makes the decision to... No, I don't know. I got nothing for
to
this
become, one. I was going to go for a Sophie's Choice book. I was going to say he just decides which of his kids lives and dies.
Wow. He has kids by book 18.
Yeah, you know, the Andalites, they work fast. We still didn't really talk about Megamorphs.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Megamorphs yet. Yeah,
let's talk about Megamorphs. So I know it's the first one we read, and we're leaving it for last, but we do need to talk about Megamorphs. And I know it's like sort of it's in canon, but it doesn't get referred to a lot because it's sort of like outside. I feel like it was like in case you didn't convince your parents to buy you the Megamorphs books or something. But like the Valeek was like objectively wild, right? Yeah. Like this energy eating monster. That's actually
swarm
a swarm.
Monster. Yeah.
That they trained to eat a different kind of energy, or I think they said they like bioengineered it.
Yeah, which is crazy because it's like, how did it only detect morphing?
And also, like, if you can bioengineer that level of a creature, why can't they teach any creature to detect morphing energy?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We got Rachel's amnesia, which was a pretty wild set of circumstances for any of the characters to find them in, because she had to relearn who she was.
Yeah.
And that brought up a lot of interesting character work with her, actually. I think, like, especially when she was remembering Cassie and how much she cared about Cassie. That was the kind of friendship dynamic that I think I was missing in book 12 when we were getting a lot of them. Like, I felt like there were some really good moments between the two of them.
As Cassie is reteaching her who she is. Yeah.
Chunks of Darlene happened there, the party.
Chunks of Darlene.
Axe and Marco made out in the basement. They played
Of course. And also, the woman in the woods. We sort of talked about her earlier, but the woman who's stealing clothes and making a fake shop in the woods, who seems to know about the Yerks, who seems to be an escaped controller.
An un-Yerk human who is, like, out there in the world.
Which, at that point, we had not yet, is this true? We had not yet seen the Yurks killing all the un-Yurked controllers, like, because I believe it's book, because they destroy the Candrona in book eight, or I'm sorry, in book seven, and then in book eight, I think, with Axe, is that when we start to see the people wigging out?
Yeah.
Or is that in Megamorphs?
No, I think it's
that was book eight. Yeah, that was where the teacher started the
because
change.
Axe couldn't tell them anything because it was Ciro's kindness. He's like, and that's how they figured him out. They were like, you know what's happening to these people and you're not telling us.
Yeah, well, book eight was really good.
They're like, we did something good destroying the Candrona and you're telling us they're just going to kill the people who were infested. Like,
yeah.
Right. Book eight is where I learned what a big wheel was, too.
We don't get another Megamorphs in this next cycle. I think we're starting
or another Chronicles
season.
It's gonna be just main series books,
just main series books
next,
I'm
quote-unquote
absolutely
season.
Fine with that.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked on it. Yeah, it'll be nice to get back to normal for a while and get sick of our kids again.
I liked Megamorphs a lot. I understand why it gets crap. It was ridiculous, it was silly, but it was a really nice change of pace too, to get like all of
it was
it did. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's the next Megamorphs that gets most of the crap.
Yeah.
Or perhaps there's like four Megamorphs books. And the Valik and the whale and like all that, I don't know. We saw the whale in book four, but seeing the whale again and then it getting the reminder of the whale closer to Andalite Chronicles to compare it to the Taxon Mother Hive. And like my new theory that every creature has some sort of like every planet has this creature that has some sort of primordial understanding, like
the whale, the living
and
hive.
It seems like it's whales for us and like maybe the living hive for taxons.
Yeah, unless the whale is like the chi, like you suspect the chi is, and it won't come back again.
If they can train Valik to smell morphing, and then it really is that easy, like, why don't they just train bloodhounds to do it? Like, I'm imagining
that thing, right?
We have a swatch of the murderer's clothing, and we're going to have the dog smell it, and we're going to go hunt them in the...
Like, if you can biologically engineer something to change what it eats, why are we not just, like... The idea that they can do that, but they don't just have, like, a scan of the Earth up and running at all times that detects spikes of morphing energy is, like, a little ridiculous.
It's true. It is, that's a good
point.
But
that's who our Visser is. He's someone who starts many projects but doesn't finish them.
I can relate.
Oh, so I find that very relatable.
Well, that's consistent with how we feel about Visser 3.
That's true. You know, it's really, you know how they... maybe you two are a little older, so I don't know how much SpongeBob you watched, but like a lot of people are like growing up is realizing that Squidward was the most relatable character on SpongeBob. And I'm like,
maybe growing up is
realizing that Visser 3 was the most relatable character in Animorphs.
aside from the murder,
but you know what? You're trying to climb the ranks. You got to please the boss and you want to do it. You want to live your art and it's hard to do both.
It's hard to do both. We all know. We all know.
Sometimes you gotta murder.
Who said that? Who said that?
I don't know.
Who said that?
That was just straight out of my soul.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
So, what's our plan going forward?
Well, I think we should just end it here. I think this is a good spot to
end
the whole series.
As we all know, Spider-Man 2 is the best ending point.
Spider-Man 2 is the best ending point of the Spider-Man.
It's actually such a good ending point that for The Amazing Spider-Man, they didn't even make a 3.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just put it in the
Andrew Garfield.
They were okay.
Well, you know,
the first
I would
one
say
I actually
that,
really liked. The second one had some major structural issues.
So this might be a little high concept. But I think what we should do is, guys, we have to follow our inner Visser, okay? Like, if we've burned out on Animorphs, maybe it's time that we do something different. Now, hold on. Before you cut me off, maybe we start a new podcast, same RSS feed, called The Anadorks. And it's just that you say it a little different.
And there's like a little accent next, over the O.
The Anadorks. Yeah, exactly. Instead of the Anadorks, it's the Anadorks. And now we do the Anadorks, and we do the next five or six books. And maybe a guest here and there. More fun and hijinks. But it's a totally new podcast. I'm going to do Eddie's part. Eddie's going to do Miranda's part. Miranda, I'm so sorry. You're going to have to do my part. And it's, yeah. But I think it's going to be a subtle difference. Because Miranda, our impressions of each other, like, for example, Miranda, do your impression of me right now. I'm Miranda doing an impression of Chris right now. See, it's spot on. It's spot on. Recently we found you can't tell the difference.
Limitations of the audio medium with our silent laughter, but now we're finding the strengths of it. The
strengths of it, theater. The advantages of it.
Okay, we are talking.
That's right. I'm Chris. Mm-hmm.
And this is still Eddie.
And you can't prove me wrong.
I don't think we should make any promises yet by saying the names of who we're planning to interview, but we do have ideas for interviews, and we are in
talks with some people. Yes. Yeah, like communications have been issued. We're not just, you know, we're not just talking about it on the podcast this time. We're putting it in digital ink.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can expect to hear from our mothers. I'm just kidding. That's not going to happen.
Honestly, the Marie and Lisa Anadorks Companion podcast is what I want.
It would put us out of business. People would stop listening. What are they talking about on those walks?
No, what are they talking about? We should just record their walks. I think everybody would like it a lot better.
Their companion podcast is two people who have not read the Animorphs listening to Anadorks trying to make sense what those books are about.
Maybe they could do a sex education podcast.
Oh, they do both love sex education. Like that series. That's true.
Yeah.
It's going to be called Amy's Emotional Support Goat.
Yeah.
Because that's all mom thinks about anymore.
Oh, really?
She said to me today, because my parents showed me this show, and we were taking a break between seasons 3 and 4 because we have too much TV now to watch. One of the characters gets, like, it's supposed to be a pet for bonding as a couple and also emotional support, but they didn't have anyone who could take care of it, so this character is just going everywhere with, a mini goat.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite characters.
Takes it to school. She's a good character. Yeah.
Send us emails, 5-star reviews, we have a Patreon.
Please leave us 5-star reviews.
Tell your friends.
If you know, like, if you want to interact with us on social media, like, please do, because, like, we're actually just nervous to start. Like, we're still hanging on the wall. Like, we're at the middle school dance and we're on the wall. You know what I mean? And we're waiting for someone to come up to us. So if you want to engage with us on social media, that would be great.
We're sending wild signals, by the way. If we're talking about, like, rimming the pocket verse on the wall at our first dance, like, that's wild energy. That's like prepared to do one thing, but can't even say hello or wave or make eye contact.
That's been very true of the people that I've known in my queer friend circles. So, like,
fair enough. Yeah, I think it tracks. I was gonna say, may the Candrona shine
and strengthen you all.
Until we find another. I don't know if they're ever gonna say that again in the series, but
that's true.
We'll keep an eye out for other catchphrases.
When I sign off from work.
It's actually my email sign off.
I slack it.
May the Candrona shine and strengthen you all.
Thanks for listening to Anadorks. We'll be back soon with lots more to say. Until the Andalites return, or at least until next time. See you soon!